Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It was 500 years ago that the Protestant reformers broke with the Catholic Church in what has become known as the Reformation. It redefined the religious landscape. It was not a peaceful transition. Catholics and Lutherans, though, are coming together in this anniversary year in the spirit of reconciliation. In that spirit, two events are taking place next Sunday and Monday. With me, to put it in context, are Deacon Carl Sommer, adjunct professor of church history at Kenrick Lenin Seminary. Pastor Keith Holstey is co-pastor at Christ Lutheran Church in Webster Groves and co-director of the Lutheran School of Theology. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
It's my pleasure.
Good to be here.
Carl Sommer, let me begin with you. Can you kind of help put this in context? What was the role of the Catholic Church in your pre-Reformation?
The only branch of Christianity throughout Western Europe, Italy, France, Spain, Germany, Norway, the Scandinavian countries, was in fact Roman Catholic Christianity. And by 1517, there were concerns about corruption in the Catholic Church. This is nothing, I'm not acknowledging anything new here. Catholics have long acknowledged that there were problems in the Catholic Church in this period. In 1517, Martin Luther objected strongly to the selling of indulgences, of forgiveness of sin, the temporal punishment for sin, by a priest by the name of Johann Tetzel. And this was the immediate precursor to Martin Luther nailing the 95 Theses to the church door at Wittenberg.
Can you pick up the story there?
As Luther discovered this, I think it was a personal thing for him as well. He was concerned about the selling of indulgences. He'd been to Rome and made a visit there in 1510 and wasn't pleased with what he saw. And at the same time, he was within his own mind going through and his own spirit and heart going through some changes and began to look to some direction for there to be an assurance of forgiveness with God. And so he began to see this in Scripture as the Scripture was more revealed to him. And within a few years, he translated the Scripture into German, but he was fluent in Greek and the original languages, was able to do that. And began to see for himself that he had a way of salvation with God promised through Scripture. And he began to want to make sure that everyone had this ability. So a little bit later, when he was taken for his own safety into a castle, he had much time on his hand, and he translated the Scripture into German so that more people could see what it was, since that was the language of the day. But there were more conflicts and confrontations. He was brought before the emperor. He was brought before leaders. He happened to have an elector, Frederick the Wise, in his own territory, who supported him, who in a sense hired him and brought him into his university that he wanted to make a great university. But he had a supporter in his own corner, but he had a culture around him that he was against. He didn't necessarily ever want to make a new church. He just wanted to try to correct it to have it more accessible to the people.
And what was the Catholic Church's response to this, seeing its hold in this part of Europe loosening?
Eventually, Dr. Luther was, in fact, excommunicated by the Catholic Church. This occurred several years after the events of 1517. There was an attempt at dialogue, discussion between the two sides, but they, in fact, quickly broke down.
And beyond that, kind of what happened to this unfold here?
Okay. He began to see more things happen, I think, and there began to be more parishes that were with him. And he began to see for himself in more ways that this needed to be something that more people needed to believe in and made it more accessible to people. And so there was a cultural thing going on here, too, in Europe, and that it wasn't just the church changing. There had been reformers before him who had been burned at the stake, but they didn't have a culture around him. But Europe itself was becoming more humanistic. We had great artists and other people at the same time kind of opening things up, and the people were getting a little more unsettled also, less content with where they were and wanting to do other things. But he began to – and the big thing was the printing press was brought to use at that time, so the word could get out further. And that was a big change for the time and had a lot of influence for him. So he began to put things in the words of the people, small treatises, things that were readable, newspaper size, and translated songs into the – well, he was a musician also and could write hymns that people could sing easily in a pew. Before that, they were mostly chants, I think. He brought hymn singing to be. So between hymns and reading and teaching of reading and putting the things of the church in a simple form, and he had a simple catechism for people to use in their homes. So he had a way to popularize the movement, I think. Not that, he wanted necessarily to ever leave the Catholic Church, but it just – worked out that way.
And again, I'll have to ask you how the church was reacting to this.
Theologically, the church analyzed the teachings of Martin Luther and found certain difficulties with them, primarily the question of the relationship between faith and works, which incidentally, a few years ago, the Catholic Church and the Lutheran World Federation actually came to a mutual agreement on the doctrine of justification. That's a complicated theological question, but the fact of the matter is at that time there was no agreement. In matters of church polity, the church instituted a series of reforms. The Council of Trent met in the 1560s to reform the practices of the church to prevent widespread corruption, abuse of the sale of indulgences, and these things that Martin Luther had objected to. There were an unfortunate series of wars throughout the 16th century in which I think it would be fair to say, I think Pastor Holstie would agree with me, there were atrocities committed by both sides. This is one of the unfortunate side effects of war. And these wars of religion scarred the European landscape for a period of about 100 years and left a terrible legacy of mistrust between Catholics and Lutherans.
Pastor Holstie, was there a name for what was going on at the time? We've called all of this the Reformation, but what was religion, non-Catholic religion, called in those days?
I'm not a historian, but there was certainly the Reformation, but then there were other reformers who sprang up, especially in Switzerland and some in further north in Germany.
But when did they start calling it Luther?
Some of them are called Protestants.
Yeah, that was, right.
And so some were Protestants or Protestants, some were reformers, some were – and to be a Luther follower in that day was to be a Lutheran, which was a bad name. Now we call it a denomination, but all those Protestants or all those Lutherans were names that the people who didn't like it called them, and those are the names that stuck.
And a great deal of animosity, as I understand it. I'm certainly not a student of this time necessarily, but the animosity has lingered ever since to a very large degree, has it not? This is why this is such an important time and what's going on.
Yes, there has been a historical legacy of animosity, mistrust, unwillingness to engage in dialogue. The ecumenical dialogue is of fairly recent origin, I would say in the last 50 years, that Catholics and Lutherans specifically have been able to talk to one another about their differences.
That's some kind of feud lasting 450
years.
It
is, and I've been re-impressed by that as we've gone through this year, that I'm realizing it was about 1580, both sides kind of solidified their stances. There was the Book of Concord came out as a kind of the Lutherans saying, this is where we're at, and the Council of Trent kind of said, this is where we're at as Roman Catholics. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of astounding, really, that that's been in place for about 450 years till Vatican II, I think, is when in the 1960s is when things began to say, hey, we got to realize that we could do some things together and start talking. So the talk mm-hmm. started in the 1960s, I would say, leading up to the 1990s where there was coming together on the doctrine of justification by faith. So, but it is, when I think of it, it's just kind of astounding that there were 450 years of being separate. My first parishes were in Nebraska, and I remember – one hearing from the early 1900s that in the small town where I served, that if a Lutheran saw a Roman Catholic coming down the street, they had to go on the other side of the street. And it's still astounding to me that they would do that. Or a church I served in the 1990s in Nebraska, it was a joint Lutheran Catholic wedding, and the Catholics who attended felt that they needed to be in the balcony, couldn't be on the main floor. So this separation has lasted for a long time, and it's high time that we do something about
Deacon
this.
Deacon Summer, were Catholics also being told to walk on the other side of the street if they saw a Lutheran coming?
I can't speak to those questions exactly, specifically, but yes, there was an aura of separation, distinctness between the two communities, yes.
It's really ironic, isn't it, that religions which teach tolerance and inclusion took this turn for such a long period of time. Do you find that irony there?
Yes, it is extremely ironic. And I would add to what Pastor Holstie had to say that from the Catholic perspective, it was the Second World War that was the decisive moment in history where Europe was shattered by this war. As you know, Catholics and Lutherans did not have a direct role to play in the events that led to that war, but Catholics began to think that if Christians had been more united in this period of history and presented a united front, that perhaps we could have prevented the rise of Hitler and the war in Europe. And this, in fact, was the immediate impetus for the Second Vatican Council.
Boy, Pastor, when you look at it that way, think of what might have been had things gone differently.
I hadn't thought of it that way before, but yeah.
I've got to take a break. We'll do that and come back and talk more, particularly about the kind of dialogue that's taking place today. My guests in studio are Deacon Carl Summer from the Kenrick Lenin Seminary. Pastor Keith Holstie of Christ Lutheran Church in Webster Groves is also with us. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, you can do so by giving us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you would prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our guest, Deacon Carl Summer from Kenrick Lenin Seminary and Pastor Keith Holstie of the Christ Lutheran Church in Webster Groves. Let me start with you, Pastor Holstie. What were the difficulties, if any, or what was the process for establishing the events that are going to be taking place this weekend and next Monday, getting this dialogue going?
It started about 18 months ago already in the latter part of 2015, and that we received a call from the Ecumenical Office of the Archdiocese to see if we shouldn't do something together, anticipating that the 500th anniversary was coming up, which we thought was a very generous way to begin, since in a sense it's the Lutheran Reformation, but yet the call came from the Roman Catholic office.
That's a good sign right there.
It was a very good sign, yeah. And it's been very cordial ever since, I'd say. And the beginning discussions were to say this can't be handled at the tops, so to speak. It's not a matter just for theologians and priests and pastors to talk about. If nothing's ever going to happen if we don't get this to the parish level. Mm-hmm. So the first movement was to have joint parish dialogues and discussions. So around the St. Louis and Western Illinois area, we've had, we should say that the Belleville area and even down to Carbondale have been involved in this as well. Mm-hmm. About a dozen pairings of close by Catholic and Roman and Lutheran churches had dialogues in that subsequent spring, and there was a book that many of them used called One Hope, and others used a book called From Conflict to Communion. Some had other resources that they used. And so we began to do more things on the street level, so to speak, where the people are. And then always in the back of the mind was we want to do something at the time of the 500th, this Reformation weekend coming up this weekend.
Are all Lutherans involved? I know there are some, there are various groups, if you will.
There are various groups. There's a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod doing their own celebrations. They haven't been involved in these dialogues. Mm-hmm. I think they've maybe had their own talks with Roman Catholics. Carl might know more about that. But the ELCA has been going down this direction of these particular dialogues leading to this service. And
that's the Lutheran Church of America.
Yeah, Evangelical Lutheran Church of America.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. What about that? Have you been in contact with the Missouri Synod?
Yeah. The faculty of Kenrick engage in an ongoing theological dialogue with the Missouri Synod Lutheran theologians that are in the area. And this has been going on for at least 5 years that I'm personally aware of, and probably longer than that. The Missouri Synod Lutherans do not have a policy of not praying with publicly praying with other Christians who do not have full theological mm-hmm. agreement with them, and we respect that. So they have not participated in the discussions about this particular prayer service.
Can you give me any sense of what it was within the church here locally that decided that they would approach the Lutherans to get this dialogue going?
On the local level, it was the events, I suppose, in Ferguson and other events yeah. within our community that have illustrated the divisions within our community. Well, we believe that Christ has specific solutions to the problems that face our community. And the first step in that refreshing of our community, renewal of our community, would be for us to get our own house in order and increase the unity of Lutherans and Catholics in the St. Louis area.
Pastor Holstey, what does this mean going forward now that these steps have been taken and there is this reconciliation, if you will? What does it mean going forward locally amongst the two groups here?
Well, on the ground level, besides the service that will be Sunday, I think we don't want it to stop there, so we will be doing more things. I think our interparish relations will continue. We haven't that's up to each one how they continue, but nobody wants to see those go away. And so we'll keep the dialogues, getting to know the people across the street. We did things like this spring, just went to the fish fry at the Catholic Church across the street and things like that, just some common things. There's also part of our Lutheran celebration of this 500 anniversary is to do something that Luther cared about, the communities around him, and that people were cared for. And so we've raised money to build a house through Habitat for Humanity. And we hope to be able to work on that side by side, Lutherans and Roman Catholics working together, because often you can talk about things when you're not on the topic and just kind of get to know one another better. And there are ministries like Stephen Ministries that we both parishes are involved in, where you care for one another within the parish. And like our church in Webster Groves is reaching out across the street so that there's monthly training sessions for that. We can do those together instead of doing those separate. So we are trying to be more intentional about doing things up and down the street that are together.
You'd have to know a fish fry would be in there someplace. How about Deacon Summer, your thoughts about going forward?
Of course, I support all the endeavors that Pastor Holstey just mentioned. I would like to see increased cooperation in matters that are affecting our entire community, matters of social justice, matters of community relations, the charitable works of the two churches, greater cooperation in these areas. I think these are things that can be of great practical help to the local community.
I want to be sure to get this in, and I have some calls that I'd like to get to as well. But the Lutheran Catholic Joint Commemoration of the 500th Anniversary Ecumenical Prayer Service next Sunday is at 7 o'clock, and that's at the Cathedral Basilica.
That is correct.
That's
yes.
what we're talking about here today. Also, the Lutheran Catholic Joint Commemoration Panel Discussion is going to be held next Monday at 9:30 a.m. at the Aquinas Institute of Theology here in St. Louis. We'll have all of that information on our website so people can follow up on that. folks who are calling in want to go back to the historical part of this, if you don't mind. So I'll start with an email we have here that asks the guest to comment on the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church persecution of the Anabaptist Christians during the period of Reformation. I don't know what an Anabaptist Christian is. You're the historian. Deacon, why don't you take that?
Okay. The Anabaptists were Christians who did not believe in infant baptism. They are the historical forerunners of, say, the Baptist Church, et cetera, et cetera. Both Lutherans and Catholics do believe in infant baptism. I do recall a few instances where both Lutherans and Catholics persecuted this group of Anabaptists, which we have, for our part, repented of, and it's our firm intention to never go down that road ever again.
Anything you would add to that,
Just Pastor? That it shows, I think Lutherans had a little more conservative point of view in that they did believe in infant baptism, and Luther's intention, as I said before, never was to leave completely, and so there was that difference, and there were terrible things that happened, and we're sorry, they should not have.
History is full of terrible things, and unfortunately, a great many of them are done in the name of religion, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple of calls, as time will allow us to do so. We'll bring in Tom first. He's calling from South City. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I grew up here in heavily Catholic St. Louis, and 15 years ago, I was teaching history as a graduate student at University of Minnesota in heavily Lutheran Minnesota. And I encountered undergraduates who had really negative stereotypes of Catholics, very much negative caricatures. They sounded like they didn't actually know any Catholics growing up. And I wondered, where did they learn that? At Sunday school, in their communities? How did it really surprised me. I'd never encountered that outside of Minnesota.
Pastor Holstein, do you want to?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. I know any churches I've been involved in have not had Sunday schools like that. So I don't know. I can't answer that.
Like so many things, perhaps just in the home. That's where a lot of these things come from. Deacon Summer, any thought there?
I think that in rural communities there was a greater separation between Catholic communities and Lutheran communities, and probably not a lot of interchange between the two. Yeah. I'm fortunate because my mother's family is Lutheran, and my mother converted to Catholicism when she married my father. So I had relatives on both sides of the fence, and I learned at a very early age that there simply wasn't all that much separating us.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Karen joins us from St. Louis. Karen, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, I happened to just be reading The New Yorker this week, and there's a big article called The Hammer by Joan Acocello, in which she said that according to a number of books that have just come out, they differ on many points. One of them is whether this hammering episode is myth or historically accurate. It says there were no eyewitnesses. Luther himself, ordinarily an enthusiastic self-dramatizer, was vague on what happened. He remembered drawing them up, but he was only sure that he sent it to the local archbishop. And so that was one of the things I was wondering if your speakers would address. And the other one is, when I was a child growing up in a small town that had Catholics and Protestants, it was our understanding that Catholic children could not come into a Protestant church. And I don't know whether that was a myth or whether that was actually true. So I'd like to have that addressed. Thank you.
All right, Deacon, let's have you take that.
On the question of whether Luther actually tacked the 95 Theses to the cathedral door, yes, there are differences among historians on whether that event actually occurred. The 95 Theses were written, and they did exist, because this was the document that the popes were responding to. But whether it was actually tacked to the cathedral door is a matter of debate. I would say that if it happened, it was in conformity to the practice of that time. If someone had a controversial thesis or a series of theses that they wanted to debate, it would be common to simply put them up in a public place, and there would be nothing more public than a cathedral door.
Just before we turn to Pastor Holstein on this, what about Protestants being allowed in the Catholic Church, very quickly?
I think that that was not a universal church policy. It would have been a question of individual pastors' preferences or what individual churches were teaching at that time.
Yes. Pastor Holstein?
Back to the hammering incident, probably the main thing that happened is that Luther mailed these to his to the super one in charge. So again, historians are saying maybe or maybe not that he actually hammered them to the door of the church. But I also understand that it was a commonplace for professors to put statements, and that it was written in Latin, so that probably it was for other professors and not necessarily for other people to read when he did it that day.
We're going to have to leave it at that. I'm afraid there's much to talk about, but not enough time. I'll remind folks that the joint commemoration of the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, the ecumenical prayer service next Sunday at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis. There's an event the following day. We'll have all of the information on that on our website. Thanks to Pastor Keith Holstein for being with us today, and co-pastor at Christ Lutheran Church in Webster Groves, and Deacon Carl Summer. Thank you for being with us. He's the adjunct professor of church history at Kenrick Glennon Seminary. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.